Up until now, Stephen Merchant has been known as Ricky Gervais' mostly silent and seldom seen partner. Together, they created two extremely successful British television series, The Office and Extras. And now he has embarked solo on an ambitious 42-city stand-up tour called Hello, Ladies. He's playing Town Hall tonight and tomorrow, and I'm very pleased that it has brought him to our show. Hello.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
The Office has been a phenomenal success, an international success. Haven't you ever regretted not getting more credit for it?
I don't think I've ever felt that I wasn't given credit. I mean, Ricky's always been very complimentary about me, and certainly in the UK, I've always felt like the press is aware of my involvement.
Well, in this country, he gets all the glory, and yes, you but then do he also most gets of the heavy the, lifting.
Well, he also gets the criticism, I guess, I suppose when I did it, I was just excited to be involved with the TV show. You know, my ambition from a young age was to be involved with a sitcom that was well regarded, and so when that was happening, I wasn't desperately sat there thinking I must be in the show as well. It was the first thing we'd done, so neither of us knew it was going to be a success. We certainly didn't realise it was going to make Ricky a household name, and so it never sort of occurred to me really to sort of force myself into the show.
What did you think it was? Kind of show that would develop a cult following.
We thought we could maybe get 1 million viewers and that it would be their favorite show and very much a cult hit, but that there would be a core audience that really sort of it struck a chord with. And initially, I think our estimations were right, and certainly it took a while to sort of find its audience, particularly in the UK. And then something happened somewhere along the line. It started, word of mouth spread, as is so often the case with comedy. And before we knew it was sort of being referenced a lot culturally, and it was in the papers, and Ricky's face was being used to illustrate any news story about any office-related thing. You know, some EU study on the safety of desk chairs would be a picture of Ricky sat in a chair. So suddenly we felt it was sort of in the ether, you know, in the air, and off it went, really.
But he couldn't walk down the street without being recognized. You still could.
Absolutely. In fact...
Was that something you preferred?
It was just not something that concerned me, really. I suppose, the odd thing was, and I know this seems facetious, but being very tall, I've always had people look at me and stare at me. You know, from a young age, people always...
Well, you're very tall.
I'm 6'7", and people just feel that they can say and pass comment on that. I think it's because it's seen as an achievement, being very tall. It's like people go, yeah, well done, you're really tall. And so people always commented on that, always mentioned it. And so I suppose I always felt people looking at me anyway. And suddenly it seemed like they were looking at him because he was on TV and me because I was freakishly tall.
Well, in pretty much all of the interviews you have been conducted, people put together these odd descriptions. There's things like Telegraph pole with a head. The New York Times said that you look like Mike TV from Charlie and the Chocolate Factory,
yeah.
Post-stretching.
Yeah, and it's interesting they say that. Like, I think we just did a new show with a little person, a dwarf actor. You would never make those kind of comments in a news article. You know, if you're writing a sort of upmarket interview with Warwick, you wouldn't ever make that mention. But for some reason, it's like I say, people think if you're very tall, they could just make a remark about your height.
They'd never make that kind of remark if you were a basketball player, but... basketball's not big in the UK.
No, I guess so. I mean, it's funny, I went to a Lakers game. I was lucky enough, my agent got me some tickets to a Lakers game once, and I was on the floor with them, and I felt like I'd come home. I felt I was amongst my people at last, you know, because there, you know, the very tall person is celebrated, and suddenly I felt sort of like I was amongst my folk.
But doesn't the anonymity also limit the kinds of encounters that you describe in your act, where a stranger starts to tell you what's wrong with the office?
Well, it's funny because that was the thing. I remember certainly the anonymity in the early days of The Office. I remember I was on a train after the first few episodes had aired, and a woman was talking with her friend, and she obviously had no idea who I was, and she said, did you see that TV show last night, that documentary about an office? And her friend said, I don't think that was a documentary. I think that was a sitcom. And her friend said, oh, it wasn't very funny then. And she'd been fascinated by it when she thought it was real. And as soon as she thought it was a comedy, she'd hated it. And I remember later when the Christmas...
But the reason it was so funny is because it is real.
Right. Well, certainly, I mean, at the time, Ricky was not well known. So, yeah, a lot of people think we're fooled by it. I think that's true. But again, I remember when the Christmas shows aired, I never watch things when they're on TV. And I was playing pool in a pub. And two guys were next to me. And the show aired in two halves, like over two separate nights. And it was the second night. And these guys were playing pool. Again, no idea who I was. And just one of them went, did you see The Office last night? And the other guy went, yeah, it sucked. And you know, it's like, you can't... There's nothing you can say. You can't lean over and go, excuse me, I was involved
with
that. Yeah.
Well, one of the visual bits in your show involves a picture printed in a newspaper after The Office won a Golden Globe Award. Is that truly the photo as it was printed in the paper?
Listen, I don't want to confirm or deny the elements that are real or massage slightly in my show. There's a lot of it is a lot of it is true. A lot of it is exaggerated slightly, based on reality, based on things. I would hate for people to be able to pick apart the reality show. But certainly the stand-up show is all shot through with reality. But I think often it's what I've done is I've pulled bits of my life out from different stages in my existence, if you like. Do you know what I mean? So there's a little bit of 14-year-old me and there's a bit of 25-year-old me, and it's all sort of mushed together in one kind of package.
Well, this should I tell what happened in that picture?
I would. Yeah. I'd rather they saw the show.
Well, your mother must have been heartbroken.
You've teased them. Now they'll come along.
Your mother must have been heartbroken when she saw that in the paper, if it actually happened. So you were tall.
Yeah.
And you say that you were enamored with P.G. Woodhouse when you were in high school and basically went to school dressed as Jeeves.
I wouldn't say that. No, I took to, of my own free will, I took to wearing a bow tie for a period of time.
Was this a co-educational school?
This was just like a kind of, you know, like, I guess you'd call them here a public school. Mm. Not flash, not impressive, just a local school. We were obliged to wear a uniform of sorts, but I decided I'd be particularly dapper if I wore a bow tie. Turns out girls aren't impressed by bow ties. This is what I realized.
What confuses Americans is public schools are schools, what we would call private schools.
And you would call them private schools?
British public schools, you pay to get into
school,
their
right.
private schools.
But here, a public school is just a local school.
Yeah,
there
are private schools. But you were going to one of the state schools.
One of the state schools, definitely not private, by no means private.
And you say that you didn't go over well with the girls. Could that explain why at 37 you're doing a tour called Hello Ladies?
Well, yes, the show is very much a dissection of my romantic failings over the years. Originally, when I started talking about the show in the UK, I made a joke about it being a search for a wife. And then I started getting some kind of creepy letters. And, you know, I'm sure the women are very sweet, but they would start sending me anonymously. Well, not anonymous, but they would just arrive at my door. How they got my address, I have no idea. And kind of photographs attached and sort of what I can only describe as love CVs with kind of... I was in a relationship between 92 and 93. That didn't work out. Now I live at home with 17 cats. And so that's...
I don't mind the fact that you're so tall.
Exactly. I love the tall thing. Yeah, it was. I found it was weird. I was in the supermarket just before I came over to New York, and a woman came up to me and she said, "Hi, are you Steve?" And I said, "Yeah." And she said, "Oh, I like what you do with Ricky and things." I went, "Oh, thanks very much." Walked on, did my shop, and she reappeared again. And she said, "I hear you're doing a comedy tour where you're looking for a wife." And I said, "Yeah." And she went, "Have you found a girlfriend?" And I suddenly realized like she was going to proposition me, and I kind of panicked, and I made up an imaginary girlfriend. And I said, "Yeah, I am seeing someone." And she started asking me questions. She said, "What's her name?" So I had to make up it's Allison. And then she started asking me, was I going to spend Christmas with her? And by the end of it, I'd created an entire relationship with this woman. We're not seeing each other at Christmas. We might reconvene in the new year. But that was the sort of... You realize when you say something on the radio or on TV as a joke, I'm amazed by how many people take it seriously. You know, even though you brand yourself as a comedian, people still seem to take it seriously, which is bizarre.
Did I read somewhere that you think the word wife is funny, or is this something that you're going to get into trouble for as well?
I do find the word wife quite funny. I think because after a while it starts to lose any meaning. And so there's just something I find very funny. This is my wife. There's a sense of ownership about it. And it feels like this is my couch. this is my flat screen TV. This is my wife. It's sort of, I don't know. It seems, there's something
she could say this is my husband.
Absolutely, of course. It's just, I don't know. It's something about the more... You say wife, the more it loses anything that's romantic or kind of magical about it, you know. The idea of a wedding day being the most magical day of your life, but something about the word wife that just seems so kind of pedestrian.
Well, do you like other words like girlfriend?
Mistress.
Mistress. Groupie?
Groupie. I get girlfriends also. Girlfriend's not great, is it either? Girlfriend, it's my girlfriend. It's, yeah. Again, it's
significant other is a
oh, that's the
partner.
Worst. Significant other is sounds like a legal term, doesn't it?
Are you really as cheap as you claim to be in your act?
I am, in my soul, cheap. I think as time's gone on, as success has happened, I am less able to be cheap in the way I would like to be because it's just frowned upon. But I was raised by a man who is, I think, thrifty. And I guess I never had pocket money when I was a kid. We didn't have a great deal of money. I wasn't poor, but so I guess I always understood the value of money. And so so I think in my heart I'm cheap, and in reality I try to seem generous, even though I'm always annoyed.
And you usually suggest splitting the bill when you go to eat.
I will,
if you were the one who did most of the eating.
What annoys me is if I'm at a meal and someone else had, say, three courses and I only had one course, and then they say, let's split the bill. That frustrates me.
But they had a better wine than
they
you had.
Maybe I wasn't even drinking wine. Now I got to pay for their wine. They had lobster. I just had a little bowl of, or a little salad. And so even though now I will say, of course, let's just split the bill. But in my mind, I'm angry and frustrated.
I'm reminded of another funny man, Dimitri Martin, who has a bit in which he makes all kinds of sentences sound vaguely creepy by adding the word ladies at the end.
Oh, right. Really? That's funny. That's very funny. Yeah, I can imagine that. Yeah. I've not seen that bit, but I can see how the idea would work. Yeah.
So you also say that a Steve Merchant date does not include popcorn.
Yeah, I just have an issue with popcorn.
Popcorn's cheap.
It's not so much the cost, it's the noise that I have a problem with. It's the crunchy noise. It's, you know, I consider film to be an art form. I studied film at university. I don't want to hear you crunching your way through whatever that snack is. I don't know why that was. Maybe it was because when the popcorn first was introduced, movies were silent. But when sound was brought in, why did we keep on with the popcorn?
Is popcorn as big in England in the movie house as it is here?
Popcorn's huge, but it does bother me.
Now, I was fascinated by learning that you and Ricky Gervais met at a radio station, so there's still hope for me.
Why, you'd like to work with Ricky?
I would like to be that famous. I want to do the Golden Globes and get in trouble.
Sure. Well, I'm sure we could speak to the Golden Globes people. Surely they're not going to let him back a fourth time.
What were you doing there at the radio station?
We were sort of behind the scenes. We were sort of, I wouldn't say producers, but we were supposed to be helping with speech content and competitions and stuff like that. And then after a while, they realized that we were pretty funny, so they would let us on the radio. And we started a kind of a double act of sorts. But I realized quite quickly that Ricky was probably going to get me fired. So I jumped ship and joined the BBC and left him to his own.
He was going to get you fired because he was going to say something outrageous?
No, maybe that, or just because of his work ethic being quite poor. And they would rumble and realize that they could do without him, which is basically what happened about 6 months later, by which time I was safely at the BBC. But luckily that led to The Office and other things.
Well, you do say outrageous things in your act, some of which I rather avoid dealing with here, because then people get angry with me and they write angry letters to me. But is it fair to say that your styles are rather different? Your show has a sweet kind of self-deprecating humor, and his can be kind of nasty. Is this kind of like Lennon and McCartney?
Well, I did stand-up comedy before I ever worked with Ricky, so I guess in a way I'm drawing on something I always had. And the thing I always did was always, I think, to try and be self-deprecating. I was and remain a huge fan of Woody Allen. And Woody Allen's stand-up I used to listen to endlessly on cassette tape when I was a kid. And I loved the fact that there was a sort of mixture of faux arrogance and But he was constantly undermining himself in his anecdotes. You know, he was constantly the butt of the joke. He was always a kind of sexual failure, even though he'd like to think of himself as a great womanizer. And so I think I was always very influenced by that. And that's something I love in comedy. Is I think a lot of comedians take the higher ground. I like the idea of being sort of lesser than the audience.
John Cleese is another master of that.
Right. Absolutely. Again, he seems to have a very strong, dominating personality, but he's constantly being made to be a fool, particularly as, you know, Basil Fawlty.
So you did the stand-up act, and then you stopped because you got involved in creating these other shows.
Yeah.
And now you're returning to it after how many years?
After maybe 3 or 4 years.
Oh, it hasn't been that long.
Not crazy long.
So did you miss? Because there is something about performing live and getting those laughs, at least when you get the laughs.
I think it was genuinely an attempt to sort of to make myself uncomfortable again and to sort of force me to have to be there in front of an audience. Particularly when you do comedy, if you work in TV without a live audience, it's easy to become a little complacent, a bit insulated, you know. So I think it's good to get out in front of an audience and remind yourself what's funny. And
because you don't really have to do this anymore.
I don't have to, luckily. No,
I suspect you're rolling in dough as a result of the success of
never
TV
as much
shows.
As you would like to think. I would like to think it should be a lot more.
And you also say you don't like to perform, so
Well, it's not that I don't like to perform. It's that I don't take pleasure from performing, if that makes sense. I don't get a kick from it. You know what I mean? I don't kind of come off thinking I'm the king of the world. You know, I'm not one of those guys who says I'm alive and I'm on stage.
Stephen Merchant will be at the where
Town Hall.
Town Hall tonight and tomorrow. And for ticket information, you can go to our show page at WNYC.org. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you.